So our gospel lesson this morning is from Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. Please listen to the word of God. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it was with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So, Karl Barth, and I know you're thinking, "Karl Barth, it's summer, please," said, "We have to read the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other." Now, reading the newspapers these days is difficult for me. It seems like an assault on the senses. I feel like we are in the times of Hosea. Even though God had saved the lives of the Israelites from Egypt, they are bent on turning away from God. And for us, God even sent Jesus to show how we are to live, and we are turning away from God. We just have to look at the newspaper. So I looked through some headlines this week, and I actually wrote this on Wednesday because I've been in Baltimore until last night. So these are headlines from the beginning of the week. So let's see how they line up with God's commandments and Jesus' teaching. Now God said, "You shall not murder." Yet here are some headlines. Two American teenagers admit killing a police officer in Italy. They were singing "Family Reunion" at block party, then gunmen opened fire. Shooting at festival in California kills three. Teenage murder suspects vanish into Canada's wilderness. Airstrike hits Libyan field hospital, killing at least four doctors. Killing of student protesters in Sudan sets off new unrest and worry. And shooting at Walmart in Mississippi kills two. And this morning, there are two more headlines. Now, God said, "You shall not steal." Capital One data breach compromises data of over 100 million. Doping cloud still looms over a thrilling Tour de France. God said, "You shall not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor." The case against Jeffrey Epstein. Jesus said, "I was hungry and you gave me food." 500,000 children could lose free lunch plans under Trump administration proposal. Jesus said, "I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink." In Zimbabwe, the water taps run dry and worse than a nightmare. Jesus said, "I was a stranger and you welcomed me." No more family separations except these 900 children. Jesus said, "I was sick and you took care of me." Fifth New York City police officer since June dies by suicide. Fears of Navalny poisoning are rooted on previous attacks on Kremlin foes. Jesus was always sending people home after he cured them. Lighting money on fire as mold and rats persist in New York public housing. And in Genesis, we are called to care for creation. Under Brazil's far-right leader, Amazon's protection slashed and forests fall. Americans' farmers reeling from floods face a new problem: no water. Where biblical floods of biblical proportion drown towns and farms. Heat waves in the age of climate change, longer, more frequent, and more dangerous. And 200 reindeer starved to death. Experts call it a sign of climate change. And in Genesis, God created humankind in God's image, meaning we are all equal in God's eyes. Trump widens war on black critics, and Trump assails Elijah Cummings, calling his district a rat-infested mess. It is like an assault, and these are just some of the headlines from the first part of the week. There is anger, there is fear. This is not kindness. This is not compassion. But where does this mindset come from? So the gospel reading may be a clue. It starts out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in abundance of possessions. And it may just come down to possessions. We want to protect what's ours, and we want what is ours to grow. But Jesus says it's not about abundance of things. And the parable that follows further explains. So listen again to the rich man. What should I do? I have no place to store my crops. I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. I will say to my soul, relax, eat, drink, be merry. Do you hear it? I. It's all about the rich man, not the betterment of the community. He'll be able to eat, drink, and be merry, not the community. But God does not consider him a smart man for figuring out how to store his bumper crop. God calls him a fool. And so what happens when he dies? Who gets the crops then? Having saved everything up for ourselves does no good when we die. And so there's an alternate lectionary reading today from Ecclesiastes that sums this up. I hated all my toil in which I had toiled under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to those who come after me, and who knows whether they will be wise or foolish, yet they will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. Yes, our possessions are out of our control after we die. They may be used wisely or foolishly, but that does not stop us from wanting more now. I think this is the basis for many of the headlines we see every day. So what are we to do to get through each day? So I remember that Diana Butler Bass wrote a book called Gratitude a couple of years ago. Diana writes a lot about mainline Christianity, and she was writing this book at the time of the 2016 election. And just so you know her politics, she was looking forward to celebrating with her daughter the election of the first female president. So she was not feeling very grateful writing this book on gratitude, but she had publishing deadlines to meet. And so she starts about thinking about herself as flunking gratitude. And I understood what she was talking about, having thought about gratitude in these same ways. She had understood gratitude as having to write those thank you notes to grandparents after Christmas when they were there to thank them in person. And having to express what we each give thanks for before eating Thanksgiving dinner. She says it feels more like a turkey hostage situation than a spiritual exercise in grace. She feels thankful when it ends. So does that sound familiar to anyone? Diana recognizes two aspects of gratitude. There's me and there's we. So me is the gratitude that we each experience individually. But for us this morning, relating to the text, it's about gratitude that we experience together. She says, as human beings, we possess an intuitive awareness that we depend on others to survive. We are safer and happier when we care for each other in community, when we do things for each other. If we recognize mutuality, we experience gratitude as central to civic life. When we work together, when we share, and when we care, there is enough for all. We appreciate each other for what we all contribute to flourishing communities, and we appreciate one another for the good gifts of life. And she lifts up the Beatitudes as an example of blessings to a community, because it was, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers. Communities of people are blessed, not individuals. And the blessings they receive are all for the common good, the kingdom of heaven, comfort, inheriting the earth, receiving mercy, seeing God, being called children of God. The common good is biblical. And so as she progressed through the writing of this book, she came to think about the world in concentric circles. So she was in the middle, then there was a surrounding circle for family and friends, then local communities, then global citizenship. What a better way to look at the world than the usual way we do, as a pyramid. where the few on the top keep pushing the majority of the people to the bottom. Circles envelop us with the common good. So the headlines I read earlier really sound like a world filled with ingratitude. Pyramids, not circles. Is there any hope? Well, there are some stories I'm grateful for. So even though by the 215th day of this year there have been 251 mass shootings, I still don't have much hope that there'll ever be gun control laws in this country. But the Presbyterian Church is speaking out. Deanna Hollis serves as the coordinator of gun violence prevention ministries of the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship, and she was recently ordained to that position. And I know how hard it is to get ordained into positions that are not pastors or chaplains. And she was ordained by Grace Presbytery. Like, anybody know where Grace Presbytery is? Yeah. Dallas is the biggest city, so it's in Texas. And this story was in the New York Times. The headline was, "Thoughts and Prayers Aren't Enough, America's First Gun Violence Minister Says." Now, environmental degradation and climate change, as you know, are issues very close to my heart. It's dire. I knew Rabbi Larry Troster through Green Faith. He died recently, and someone posted a TED Talk he had done a couple of years ago. He said he had gotten involved in the environmental movement from a perspective of faith because he had concern for his grandchildren. But just 30 years later, it was not only his grandchildren who were affected, it was his generation as well. Climate change and environmental degradation are here and having an impact. But I do have hope. Young adults know it's a problem and have made this their top issue. Greta Thunberg, a 16-year-old Swedish climate activist, started the school strike for the climate. She's coming to New York City for a United Nations summit on global warming. She does not fly because of greenhouse gas emissions. She's taking a sailboat that is powered by solar panels and underwater turbines. A fossil fuel-free trip. And it's not luxury. No kitchen, no refrigeration, no showers. And it will take 2 weeks to get here. And the skipper says, there's no comfort on this boat. But the headline, Greta Thunberg to attend New York City climate talks. She'll take a sailboat. But the news story that has bothered me most regarding the common good is our president's recent tweets. And on Tuesday of this week, the Episcopal priests at the National Cathedral in Washington posted this response to President Trump. And I'm going to read parts of it. It's difficult to listen to, but it's important for people of faith to at least think about. And it gives me hope that people of faith are speaking out. And so they wrote, "We have come to accept a level of insult and abuse in political discourse that violates each person's sacred identity as a child of God. We have come to accept as normal a steady stream of language and accusations coming from the highest office in the land that plays to racist elements in society. When such violent, dehumanizing words come from the President of the United States, they are a clarion call and give cover to white supremacists who consider people of color a subhuman infestation of America. They serve as a call to action from those people to keep America great by ridding it of such infestation. Violent words lead to violent actions. So when does silence become complicity? What will it take for us all to say with one voice that we have had enough? The question is less about the president's sense of decency, but of ours. As leaders of faith who believe in the sacredness of every single human being, the time for silence is over. We must boldly stand witness against the bigotry, hatred, intolerance, and xenophobia that is hurled at us, especially when it comes from the highest offices of this nation. We must say this will not be tolerated. To stay silent in the face of such rhetoric is for us to tacitly condone the violence of these words. We are compelled to take every opportunity to oppose the indecency and dehumanization that is racism, whether it comes to us through words or actions." Tough words, tough issue. But this applies to all the issues that affect the common good. To stay silent is to tacitly condone. So how might we raise our voices to any justice we read about in the newspaper? We are living in a time of fear, anger, unkindness, and lack of compassion. So again, is there hope? Well, practicing gratitude may well help. We can start with ourselves. Diana believes that working on the me gratitude will positively impact the we gratitude. And so maybe we start each day with a gratitude prayer, like this one she found from Thich Nhat Hanh. Waking up this morning, I see the blue sky. I join my hands in thanks for the many wonders of life, for having 24 brand new hours. The sun is rising on the forest, and so is my awareness. And as Christians, there is much to be grateful for. Today we celebrate communion, the Lord's Prayer, also called the Eucharist. Eucharist means gratitude or thanksgiving. Gratitude for the life and ministry of Jesus, a sign and a symbol that we are children of God. And we can get strength for our journey from God, because from Hosea we know that God's compassion grows warm and tender for us no matter what we do. Let us be grateful for that. May it be so. Amen. So today's